Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
Like, this is us, like, learning in public and, like, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We're at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We're literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Scene. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Over the past couple of episodes, we've been honing in on this notion of community, from discussing the people who can perpetuate harm by adhering to destructive ways of, like, toxic masculinity in the episode Love Drought, to exploring how harm can happen in communities that we choose that are usually considered to be, like, safe in our episode Cold War. So following that thought process, I was hoping that we could just, like, get into the weeds some more and talk about community as it relates to our power and our gifts and what it means to take a step back and look at those gifts and what we actually have to offer community. This has really been sparked by a few, I would say, difficult lessons that I've learned this year, specifically this summer, where I've been forced to really consider my gifts and where they have the most impact and where they can be used, and using my gifts in a way that, like, aligns with what I want for my life and what I want for my community. Looking back at the episode that we did, like, maybe a year ago, I want to say, on my power, titled My Power, and we discussed what it might look like to, like, own our power through connecting to our values and how we can leverage our power by taking up space or getting out of our own way and holding on to this possibility that we always have the capacity to do better and be better. So today I really want us to speak to and about those of us who don't believe we have much to offer our community and those of us who aren't sure where we fit in or what we can give. And I also want us to speak about and to the notion of, like, experts and, like, those of us who aspire to be the organizer, the activist, and those of us who pedestalize them and platform them, and how we can imagine new ways of being in community and being in struggle with one another. So what do you think, like, how do you feel about pulling all those pieces together with, like, my power and our little, it's like a series now that we've been doing on community?
Yeah, it's been really fun and exciting seeing how the series of episodes just kind of evolved. It was never meant to be a series, but we kept, you know, having the conversation, then being like, oh, but I also wanted to talk about this aspect of it, or, but then that made me think about this. So this is a really exciting kind of next step that we're going into, this place of, like, power, empowerment. Because I think we've talked so much in the last few episodes about power over and how power harms. And so getting into how we can use power to the benefit of our communities and in service of our values, I think, is really exciting.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it too. And so taking a page from your book, where you usually just, like, announce the BIPOC of the week at the beginning, I think that makes a lot more sense. So for this week, our BIPOC of the week is...
Spoiler alert.
That's what you say. Spoiler alert. Our BIPOC of the week this week is Maryam Kaba, who is an organizer, educator, curator. Her work focuses on ending violence, dismantling prison industrial complex, transformative justice, and supporting youth leadership development. Kaba has published the blog Prison Culture since 2010, and that blog explores the many arms of the carceral state and how we might dismantle our current systems of punishment. She founded Project NIA, an organization that uses participatory community justice to fight youth incarceration. And Kaba also founded, co-founded, or co-led, like, many different campaigns, like the Free Marissa Alexander and the Risha Meadows campaigns, the Chicago Freedom School, the Chicago Community Bond Fund, We Charge Genocide, and Reparations Now, which secured reparations for victims of police violence in Chicago. And a lot of us know of, like, some of the words that she has said on social media. There's a post that says, like, yes, we mean literally abolish the police. That is Maryam Kaba who said that. And she's also said, let this moment not drive you to despair, but, like, let it fuel you, which we talk about a lot. So it's interesting to find, like, this is the first time that I've, like, read her work, but I'm like, I've obviously encountered her brilliance somehow through the interwebs. So I'll be drawing on some working definitions that Keba offers us that were found in a piece that Lala shared with me from Addy Magazine called Maryam Keba, Everything Worthwhile is Done with Other People. And in this interview with Eve L. Ewing, she interviews Keba. So there's a lot of interesting things that come out. And I'm so thrilled about this interview. I think it's so, it was just so good. I kept on reading it over and over again. And I'm like, this is what I've been looking for.
Yeah, you know? Even that title, like she has such a gift for sharing an idea. And you just, even when you hear the one sentence version of it, you're like, what? This perfectly describes something that either I already felt but didn't know how to say, or that I hadn't thought of before in quite that way. Like the quote in the last episode, I wasn't sure who quoted it. When I looked it up, I found that it was her. No one enters violence for the first time by committing it.
And right, that's her.
Wow. Yeah. And it's cool. Like, she just has this way of saying things so simply, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. And gifted. So for the quote that I'm thinking of that I botched just now is, let this moment radicalize you, which we talk about all the time. And so I think the first thing that I want to talk to you about is, like, as we talk about community and our gifts, there are these like ideals of perfection that we imagine as needed or necessary. And I think they're oftentimes like really rooted in individualism and hubris. So one of the lessons that I learned this summer has been about this need that I have, and I think that all of us deep down have, but I learned it this lesson very plain and clear, to be working out of a place of like abundance and love for community and joy and strength. And that I need to be able to be true to my values by living them out and sharing my gifts in ways that align with those values to fuel the work that I want to do that contributes to the collective. And with this lesson that I've learned this year, specifically with respect to a job that I just left, working from a place of strength and joy and abundance is so different than working out of a place of like fear or scarcity. And I think so often we're united to fight against the things that oppress us, as opposed to fighting for the things that love and affirm us, or we don't know how to do both and. It's just one thing. And I wonder what that means to you, or if you've ever felt that way, or what your kind of journey is in terms of like working from a place of strength as opposed to fear. Because I think the fear part is rooted in this idea that like, I have to do everything. Like, if I don't do it, like, it's not going to work. And like, I need to show up and I need to do this. And it's like this franticness, I think, that we end up having. And I think so many of us believe that like one individual person with all of their many talents is going to like save the day. And that puts way too much pressure on folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminded me the other day you were saying, actually, so I'm just going to like steal from your experience.
Yes, please do.
That you had started to have this feeling of like, oh, but I don't know how to do this or this, and I need to figure out how to do that. And then you were realizing, oh no, I just need to figure out what do I do and just like step into that and not feel like I have to be able to do everything. And I think that has been such a, it kind of encapsulated what the journey has felt like for me. There have always been things that I've been good at, but I, for most of my life, kind of felt like I needed to be trying to do the other things, like the things that maybe seemed more attractive to people or to fit a certain situation. And I wasn't really able to just focus on what I had to offer. It didn't feel like enough. So, I think that's been kind of the journey for me, is learning that there's value in what I offer, and that is enough, and I can really build from that place.
Yes, absolutely. For me, I've always had this fear of like people seeing me as an expert or like the person on this thing. And I'm continually in this loop of like, I don't know enough. I don't feel enough. I'm not prepared enough. And it's like, it's one, impossible for us to know all the things. Like, I don't even know what our standard of, or what our expectations of how we need to be to show up to like give our gifts to community is. I think it's often unrealistic. And Kaba talks about how it's actually really unreasonable for any of us to expect one person to fix a problem that's existed for like hundreds of years, for example. And it's like a lot of sort of just unmitigated gall and hubris to believe that like one person will be able to like solve all of these wicked, wicked problems. And reading that, I was like, oh, thank God, because she said, and I quote, like, it depresses me to think that, like, people are just counting on me. And she's done so much work, right? So even in her saying that, I was like, wow, she's giving us this gift of being like, even I, who's done all this stuff, I'm like, oh, don't look to me always. Like, I'm just a person. I'm just one human being trying to do what I can. And we'll get to that, like, piece about doing what we can, because I think it's so important and empowering for us. But there's so much that gets in the way of that. What do you think gets in the way of people being able to identify and share their gifts and their talents with communities?
I think that so often our gifts are not valued by dominant culture. I think a lot of people go to school and there isn't really a class that demonstrates where they can be graded on their particular gift, or if they are, it kind of ruins it, you know, because then they're having to sort of fit into the grading scheme instead of just like naturally kind of showing it. Like I'm thinking about maybe writers, for example. Maybe you have a gift for writing, but then you're taught, you know, these rules are kind of like hammered into you. I even remember my mom used to do gifted education, and she used to teach math sometimes to kids who were like really far beyond their grade level. So a couple of them would be pulled out and get this different lesson. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody who just sort of naturally knew certain things mathematically without being taught like the supposedly the correct way to do it. And then once she taught him the correct way to do it, I'm putting air quotes, if people can't see me.
Yes.
He lost his ability to like do it whatever way his brain was like magically doing it before. So wow. I think there's so many ways that being socialized into this particular culture and this particular system, it really robs us of some of those natural gifts in favor of fitting in or doing things like the quote unquote correct way.
Yeah. And I think that is such a great point. Oftentimes we're looking to like these systems like academia to validate the intelligence. And we're like, okay, well, if I don't have like, if I didn't take this kind of class, or like, if I don't have this like degree. And of course there's certain things like to be a counselor, you have to go to school. There's certain things that you have to learn through like learning in a formal setting, obviously. But I think as well, to your point, it's like, there's also a whole lot of gifts that we have that we can't learn them in school. We can't even learn them like from reading them. You have to like, you develop them from just being in your body and being who you are. And not acknowledging that sort of like school of life that we learn a lot of these lessons and we build our gifts up upon usually means that a lot of us don't think we have anything to offer at all.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the things that we need most, it's probably no coincidence that a lot of the things we need most in this moment aren't things you can learn in school and are in fact things that wouldn't be valued in school. Because I think, you know, people who might have natural abilities as healers, those aren't going to be things that are valued in school. And in fact, being a very sensitive child and being able to sort of see how the things around you are harming you and other people and what would need to be done about that, I mean, that's very punished in school. I can speak to that definitely as a personal experience. And, you know, a lot of experiences or a lot of skills and abilities around leadership and, you know, critical thinking and things like that, I think, are very much punished in schools where it's very hierarchical and very, you know, don't question these authority figures. You just follow the rules or else you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And you're speaking, like, as you're talking about that, that idea of like these are the teachers and that power dynamic that exists of like you're the person who needs them for something else. I want to talk about like experts and like organizers with a capital O and activists with a capital A and like the kind of professionalization that happens with that, especially within our movements, because I know that those people and like the kind of charismatic leadership or the experts of certain issues, they're so important in our communities to like give us the facts and give us the truth about things. But I also believe that we end up sort of, I don't know, assuming that like we're not, if we're not the leader or the organizer or the professional activist or whatever, that like there is like an unworthiness of being in their, even in their space or in their aura. And we really do this like we prop people up and pedestalize folks in a way that I think is like really dangerous. And so, you know, I felt this way of folks that I admire. I felt that imposter syndrome or that like sense of inadequacy of like, I can never do that. Or even just like the fangirling, you know, where you're like, oh, you're so incredible. And it's like, yes, we should give people their flowers. But there are like, there's this, I don't know, there's this something that happens where we're not able to see that person as like human as we are and as flawed as we are, you know?
Totally. I think that then comes up a lot too, like, God forbid we ever question something that one of those people says. And, you know, there's ways to do it. I think there's too often these kind of extremes of either not questioning at all or being very like aggressive or hateful, like,
yeah,
but they're both extremes. And I think that celebrity culture, that pedestal, I think really fosters the extremes, because that's an extreme thing to put somebody on that pedestal, to act like somebody is somehow above the rest of us. Mm-hmm. That is dehumanizing, and that leads to either the extreme good of you're flawless and if you're saying something that doesn't sit right with me, I must be wrong, or you're the worst person ever and I hate you and you have no feelings, so I'm just gonna go ahead and like harass you on Twitter or whatever it might be.
Oh God, right? Yeah, exactly. So one thing that CABA offers is this working definition between an activist and an organizer, which I found really interesting. And I'm going to read it out to you. And then I'm going to ask, like, have you ever heard of this distinction? Because I think we always conflate the two pieces. So she says that activism is an individual action and practice that you do by yourself in relation to a specific issue or set of issues that you care about, like raising awareness, signing petitions, educating people. But activists themselves are actually not accountable to anyone, which like that it can be a bit dangerous. Whereas organizers and organizing always requires others and requires you to be accountable to other people. It's never a solo endeavor. And in fact, doing it alone, it delegitimizes it, and it actually leads to like a lot of burnout. And CABA goes on to say that like organizing is both an art and a science. It's thinking through a vision, a strategy, and then figuring out who your targets are, always being concerned with power and about power and understanding power, always being concerned about how you're going to actually be able to build power in order to push your issues and in order for you to get to that target and move in a way that you want to move. So I'm curious, like, have you ever heard of that distinction? Because I thought it was really helpful. And do you think that there's more complexity to those things? Like, can they be both in the same, or are they two separate pieces?
Yeah, I thought it was really helpful too. And I hadn't heard them defined that way before. And I wish that I had, because I think there was a long time where I thought that I had nothing to offer in terms of activism because I'm not an organizer. And right, because I didn't really think I probably could be an organizer, you know, just being an introvert with chronic illness. It's like a lot of the things that organizers do aren't really things that I am going to be able to do. So I wish I had heard that before to kind of realize that there are other roles to play in activism. I think organizers are activists, but activists aren't necessarily organizers. By that definition. Yeah. I guess there's a couple things that I'm not sure about. One was on the activist side, the idea that you're then not accountable to anybody. I was just thinking, because I guess I'm thinking about like the work that I do as a therapist and even like with this podcast and Healing in Color, I think we still can be accountable to the immediate people around us that, you know, because like nobody's an activist literally alone, like not talking to anybody else or, you know, impacting anybody else in any way. So I think we can still be accountable to the people around us. Maybe I'd have to hear more about what she meant by that. And then the other thing was she put power under organizing. And I feel like activists should also always be concerned with power, although maybe we're not like building power in the same way. So I don't know. Those are just kind of the question marks in my head after hearing that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think I like that. I mean, that question of are activists, I think activists aren't really in isolation because the outside world is what is making you feel like, oh, I need to do something or I need to educate people. So you're always in some sort of feedback loop. But I guess it is like the difference in my mind from how she's described it. It's like the difference between working as an individual and intentionally working with other people for a purpose that is outside of you. So
yeah. And it might be that activists like can work in a way where we're not accountable to anybody else. Like maybe as an organizer, because you're intentionally working in groups, it's like that accountability has to be built in. Whereas maybe there are ways to be activists where you might be able to get away with not being accountable to anybody. But I would say, yeah, that any activist should be working to be accountable.
Yeah. One thing, so interestingly, as you're talking about that accountability piece, Kaba goes in and talks about how her father was this revolutionary activist in West Africa and Guinea, and he imparted a lot of like really sage wisdom to Kaba and her siblings growing up. And so like even if you're not an activist or an organizer, you don't even know where you stand, I think there's one piece of information that has been helpful for me and that I've just like discovered this year to be true is that like the gifts that I have usually don't just materialize out of a vacuum. Like there's usually been some history of like me learning that from somebody else. Like I don't usually have a unique like original thought. It's just a consolidation of, you know, this person's, I heard this person say this thing and I've seen this thing and this is what I believe. And it's this like awesome blending of all those pieces. And in that way, that is like this like lineage of my knowledge or the things that I might, let's say for this podcast, like my gift could be speaking. And it's like the things that I'm saying aren't just unique thoughts onto me. I have feelings that are unique to me or that are, you know, things that I believe, let's say. But a lot of my politics are rooted in this like legacy of folks that came before me, which I think is so helpful because it takes a lot of the pressure off. You're like not supposed to, well, for me, it's like, I don't need to come up with like the original thought of anything necessarily. That's not really my role. My role is to be that vessel to add whatever I can to the things that other people have already built, which I think is powerful.
Yeah. And that was so kind of liberating for me to realize that just because something, an idea has been had before, it doesn't mean it's not worth saying, you know, because I think I felt that pressure, especially in my 20s, you know, of like, you know, I want to contribute something, but I don't know how to like find that really unique thing that only I have ever thought and said. Right. And yeah. I think when I realized like every thought has been had before pretty much, but I might say it to somebody who hadn't heard it before, or I might just say it in a particular way that resonates with somebody in a way that hadn't before, or that maybe gives them support because maybe they've also had that thought, but they haven't heard anyone else say it out loud, or they hadn't heard someone say it out loud at the right time. So just learning that there is value still in speaking and contributing, even though, you know, you didn't. And I think it's important too to think like, where did that idea come from that like I had to be the solitary genius? And I'm pretty sure it came from white men who didn't actually honor the people that they were stealing ideas from.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think it is a load off to realize that like there's nothing new under the sun, you know? Mm-hmm. And it might just the je ne sais quoi or the gift that you have might be in spreading that piece of information that has been told time and time again, but you have a different way of seeing it or looking at it or whatever it might be. Like, and I think sometimes we end up losing that nuance of the plethora of gifts that we might have because we're like, well, I can't think of something new. And it's like, well, baby, you don't have to think of something new, you know? And one of the things that, so Kaba's father talks about and told her that you have, you know, told her siblings rather, that they have responsibility to live in the world, that you have responsibility, not just to yourself, that you're connected to everyone else. You have each other. And she mentions that she recalls him saying to her siblings, like, you may think that you're alone, but you're never actually alone. And for her, that was like really important at a young age to understand the importance of the collective and that like we can't do anything alone that's worth it. And that's such a powerful idea. And one of my friends, I was like talking to her about, you know, oh my God, like I don't have a job and I'm worried about this thing. And I'm not good at this. And this is before I talked to you and I told you like some sort of sage advice that I was like, but I realize that I don't have to do everything and be everything, whatever. My friend Ariana said to me, when you walk into a room, Nick, you bring your community with you. Mm. Like you bring all the expertise and the knowledge and the care and the beliefs and the connections you have with the other experts. So you don't have to be pretending like you know all the things. That was like a brain unlock from the scarcity mindset of like, I'm not enough. I don't have enough. Like I need to know everything. I need to perfect everything, you know, when in actuality it's like, no, we should be so much more interdependent and be proud of that interdependence of like, I actually don't know, but let me pass the mic or let me go ask my friend, you know?
Yeah. And that can be powerful in that kind of practical way that you're talking about of like, you don't have to know everything because you have your connections and you can just bring in the community in that practical way. I think it's also a spiritual power, you know, to be able to know when you're walking into a room, maybe you're afraid to be in that room. Maybe it's, you know, you feel intimidated or you feel like it's not a very safe space for you to know spiritually that you have your ancestors behind you and you have your community with you, I think brings a kind of like strength and power on a different level.
Yes, absolutely. So apparently Ella Baker would used to ask, like when she would go and like meet people, she'd be like, who are your people? Like she would ask that question very explicitly. Like, who are you? Like, who do you represent? Who are the folks that like you are bringing into this room? Who are you connected to? And I found that to be really beautiful. What she was trying to get at is like, you represent more than just yourself. And that might seem like a big weight, but I think it's also like this big energy and strength that we can draw from, like you're saying, like your ancestors that have come before you and done what they have done. That is also within you. That's a gift that's in and of yourself. And then, but I think you mentioned this earlier about like stopping this need to go outside of yourself to find the thing, like noticing and trying to find the like God in you and the things that you already possess, as opposed to, oh, I need to go outside of myself and like be amassing this knowledge in this type of way for me to be able to speak on this. It's like, well, maybe sometimes we're so focused on the perfection of like where we need to be that we don't see the value in sharing with other people the process of us learning that thing. The cool thing about this podcast is like learning in public. So it's like, we're not trying to, I'm not saying that I'm an expert in anything. Like I hate that pressure. It's like the opposite of freedom. For me, it's more freeing for me to be like, I think I know some things. Like I don't know all of it, but I know like this much, you know? If we're doing something because we're like, well, I want to be the first person to do it, or I want to have my name on that thing, or even like, I want people to like, I want to leave my mark on something, which I think is in and of itself is like, it can be a beautiful thing, but it's also oftentimes tied to like an ego that isn't interested in serving the greater good. And so there's this story that my friend Lauren, who's Haida and Cree Métis, shared with me. It's called The Flight of the Hummingbird. And it's a story that has roots in the Quechuan people of South America, but her Nuni, her grandmother, shared it with her. And the gist of it is that there's this fire that raged in a forest and all these animals were affected and all of them are really scared. Like there's a bear and an owl and like a deer and none of them could figure out how to put out this fire except for one animal, this hummingbird, Tuktuktiam. And Tuktuktiam was like taking to the air and just like going to this lake and like picking up like a single drop of water to put out the fire. And the animals were like, what are you doing? Like this isn't really helpful. And Tuktuktiam was like, I'm doing what I can. Doing whatever it is that we can do, as opposed to seeing ourselves in deficit. And I think that goes back to my piece earlier about like working from a place of strength as opposed to like deficit or fear or scarcity of like, well, I don't have all the things. Like Tuktuktiam was using one single solitary drop of water to try to extinguish the fire. It's a massive forest fire. Would that like be the thing that puts out all the flames? Probably not. But doing what you can is that more accessible starting point and that step for us to like be actually able to leverage our gifts and our skills, you know? And I think like for myself, I was for so long have been way more comfortable with being behind the scenes because of imposter syndrome. And I've had to ask myself like, do I want to be behind the scenes and not stepping into my power or offering my gifts in a real tangible way for this like desire to come for comfort or keeping myself safe? And in doing that, am I really showing up for my community? Like, am I getting out of the way because I think that I should or because that's what's needed?
Totally. And I think we have to work to figure out how it feels, it feels when we're in these different contexts, because that's kind of the only way ultimately we'll really know if we're in the right place. I find usually when something feels right for people, they usually feel a sense of like openness or like an expansiveness or an ease or a sort of settled feeling. And when something isn't right, there's a sort of like tension, fear, mind racing, those kinds of things. That's not to say that we should never do things that scare us, but I think there's a difference. And that's, I mean, I think it might be different for everybody. This is just kind of what I'm sharing based on my own feelings and a lot of clients, but I think it's probably different for everybody to know the difference between this is the right thing for me, but it's maybe a little scary and I kind of have like jitters about it, versus like, this feels wrong in some way. And these are, again, like, I don't think our culture is very supportive at all, the dominant culture, of us being that tuned into our feelings. Like, so often we have to go along with things that feel so wrong to us that we start to not even be aware of what it feels like when something's wrong, because we're taught that thing that feels wrong to me is right, you know? So it can take a lot of work and unpacking to start to find within ourselves, how do we know when something's right? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. I think that's exactly what it felt like this summer when I quit my job. Like, You know what I mean? Like, it was like knowing when it's actually not in alignment at all.
Yeah.
And instead of like quieting that voice that's telling you that this isn't feeling right, it's like listening to that voice and honoring that voice. And it might bring you to a place where you have to make a decision. You know what I mean? Like, it might bring you to a place where you're like, I'm actually not even ready to make this choice or for me to like find out this truth. But I think that is a really worthwhile journey, because then I think the more that we're able to tune into like our bodies and what our bodies are telling us when we're, you know, not in alignment or when things don't feel right, the more we're able to tune into the power, like the other side of things. Like, okay, it's telling us that like this doesn't feel right, but it's also going to be telling us when things do feel good, like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So in talking and thinking about like the expert, the activist, the organizer, Kaba draws on this lesson from her father, this idea of consolidating power. And I think this happens a lot of the time in our movements where we have this fixation on having like a one person that will save the day, or this need for us to have like the leader or the expert or whatever. And in consolidating power, we sometimes can become fixated on just being like the one person to do this one thing and adhere to scarcity tactics or scarcity sort of politics. And in the process, we actually alienate ourselves from being in community. Where do you think this comes out? Like, have you seen that sort of consolidation of power effect and this sort of, I guess, this energy of like, I have to be the only person in the room, as opposed to like, I'm bringing all my people with me into this room? And where can that be detrimental to our movements?
I've seen a lot of infighting in communities, and it gets to this point where people are like, well, I don't want to do this if this person's involved, or like, this person's trash, so like, we can't work with them. And then it just, communities get really splintered and fractured, and it's really hard to build the things that we want to build. And it just seems to, again, go back to all the things we've been talking about in the last few weeks of people not knowing how to resolve conflicts, or, you know, ego being so in the way, where people would rather be right and they would rather die on this hill of being correct in this particular conflict than actually building with a community.
And the building with the community piece is so crucial. Like, one of the ways that we can move away from that infighting, or I think even that that need to be right. And I mentioned this to you before. Like, I think sometimes we adhere to such puritanical, like, purist ideas of things that we don't know how to, like, get into the mud and the mess. And we don't know what to do when the mud and the mess presents itself. We're like, no, I don't want to get dirty at all. It's like, well, honey, you got to get dirty. Like, mm-hmm. we're not, like, none of us are perfect. So when we come with these, like, hyper ideals of what things should be, I think it's valuable to help us imagine the worlds that we want. But I think there's a gap between the worlds that we want and the ways things are. So what do we do in the meantime?
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. I think maybe we need to be looking again at our goals, some of us in the organizing or the activism that we're doing, because I think so often we are focused on proving a point, and that can be good. Like, when something's happening, something's being said that's harmful, it can be very important for sure to correct that for all the people who are watching and listening. But I don't know. I guess it just makes me think of the Toni Morrison thing about the function of racism being distraction, and how you're always so focused on, like, proving that, you know, they say you're not as intelligent, so then you're proving that you are. And, you know, it just keeps you from doing your work. And I guess I'm just thinking about the ways that we often are very focused on certain battles and the things that we're fighting for, like the world that we want to live in and the communities that we want to live in, that keeps getting delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed because we're so busy with the latest, like, argument. And I think a lot better work would be done in some of our communities if we're more focused on care work and, like, taking care of each other and building, like, these small, like, oases. Is that what's the plural of oasis?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it.
Healthy communities.
And, like, yeah, you're so right. I think you're right. We totally defer the things that we actually want because we're focused on we, like, are creating problems, or problems exist, but we don't know how to work through them efficiently so that we can get on with the actual work that we're organizing ourselves and, like, you know, rallying around our community to actually do. And it's like, what a waste of our time and energy.
Yeah, that's sometimes a thing, like, that comes up with clients who are so involved in activism and organizing work that they often have no time for self-care. And we have to talk about sometimes, like, okay, well, let's say that we lived in a world where systemic oppression didn't exist. Like, what do you think you would want to do with your day if you didn't have to wake up every day and fight, you know, anti-blackness and homophobia and transphobia and all these other things? Like, what would you want to do with your day? Mm-hmm. And it's really important to build some time for that, because otherwise we just get so unhealthy and burnt out. And I think that should be true at the community level as well. Like, we can't always be, you know, just gathering in reaction to a horrible thing that's happened that's so draining. Like, we need to also gather in a way that's, like, uplifting for all of us.
Yes. And in thinking about what's uplifting for all of us and the importance of, I think, like, destabilizing and decolonizing what it means to be, like, a leader in our movements and how we can show up in our own individual ways and talents that isn't so focused on consolidating power or being the expert. Remember when we had that conversation, like, months and months ago, and I was like, it would be cool if we started to interview people for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And you made a point, and I think it was really apt, and I'm really grateful for it, and reflecting about this episode. You were like, yes, let's totally, like, you know, do more interviews with other people or include other people in the podcast. But I want to make sure that we are reaching out to the people that we already know that we're already in community with, to, like, bring those people along with us, as opposed to, like, be reaching out to, like, the outside expert, the person who's, like, got that status. Because while it might give us some credibility and it might be really cool and it might be fun, it's like, if our work is to, like, for collective liberation, that means creating the space wherever we can to bring the people that we know that are doing this work and might not be the quote unquote celebrity expert, whatever, but are doing this work and are being, like, should be known for doing this work, closer to the center, closer to a place where they can share their gifts with the community too.
And the idea, the same idea that, you know, led to this podcast, that you don't have to be an expert or a celebrity or, you know, achieve some level of, like, quote unquote excellence in order for your thoughts to be worth hearing. Mm-hmm. And that actually people who are just living day-to-day lives need to be heard. And this sort of is going back a step, But you said decolonizing these ideas of like experts and leadership and things like that. It's really important for us all to be looking at whose land we're on and then seeing what we can find out about what leadership looks like in those nations and those communities. What does leadership mm-hmm. look like? What does organizing look like? And all of those things, I think that's where we need to be looking as well.
Yes, absolutely. Being more focused on our relations with each other and being intentional about building those relationships with each other. I think, and I'm going to close soon, but one last thing that I wanted to offer before I give a great takeaway from Kaba, because she has a lot of really great things in this mm-hmm. Interview, is what those of us who are known as the experts or the activists or all those kinds of things, like, you know, known as like the one person, mm-hmm. what we can do to maybe create more space and make room. Because Kaba asks, like, what if regular people had the tools at their disposal to work collectively towards justice? And I think that's a really great question for us who maybe should take more time to think about expertise hoarding, and which is so common in like a very individualist, like capitalist world where we're like, well, I want to know and be all the things. Some examples of how we can sort of make room are, you know, not taking work that is paid and offering services for free to certain people or at a reduced rate or at a scaled rate or whatever, or bartering your skills to share with somebody else to like impart that like wisdom and that knowledge, training and mentoring people, and just being sort of like able to offer your skill sets and your expertise in more informal ways. For example, like one of my friends, Kyla, is like a big governance geek and has been on like lots of boards, and there's a new opportunity that's being presented to me about how I can show up in that way and kind of offer some of my own expertise, but I'm not a board guru. And I was talking to Kyla about this, and she was like, I want to let you know that I just want to be there as your friend. Like, you can ask me anything you want, but I don't want to like have my name on anything. I don't need that right now. I want to step away from that need. And I was like, wow, that's so powerful that like we, I think, especially as marginalized folks, there is this like tension between wanting to like get the credit for the things that we're doing and be known for the things that we're doing, because oftentimes like our expertise, like you said, isn't even seen as valuable. And so there's this pressure that we feel like we need to be like, cite me, like you should know my name, I should get paid for that. And I agree with all of those things. But also when we're within those circles and we have privilege that's been built on being the organizer, the, you know, whatever, which is actually just power, how can we disperse that power and share that and destabilize these ideas of like, I know all the things. It's like, well, can I give my gifts to other people, or can I train somebody up so that they can go and do that in a totally different way that I maybe can't, you know?
Totally. I love that. And I did love in that interview, Miriam Kaba talking about the organizer shouldn't be front and center all the time. Like they should be more kind of in the background and doing the supporting work. And I think there's always a balance to everything, I think. So I think people who aren't, you know, being given all this power and influence, we need to be like more entitled. We need to be like, cite me, like, this is my work. Yeah. Like, we need to be more self-assertive. Not that the problem's with the individual, but, you know, that's what we can control is what we do. But then, yeah, the people who have more power and influence and are more recognized, absolutely, I think, need to be doing that kind of behind the scenes work. And I think need to be citing more. Like if you learned something from somebody who has less power than you, say that that's where you learned it from.
Right. Exactly. Right?
Yep. Yeah.
Kaba notes that one of the enduring gifts of the movement for Black Lives specifically, but for a lot of all of our freedom movements, is a renewed interest in another vision of leadership. And this renewed interest asks, what's possible? You know, what have we inherited by those who never wanted to include us anyways? What can we, you know, build for us to all thrive? What can we do away with? And what can we create that's like brand new? And it's the possibilities piece that keeps me working personally, that keeps me, you know, in the game of wanting to do my part. But it's really hard. And like Rima Kaba recognizes that too. So to close, I just want to offer what she has said about sort of like that hope, but also the challenge of it all. So she says, the reason I'm struggling through all of this is because I'm a deeply, profoundly hopeful person. Because I know that human beings with all of our foibles and all the things that are failing have the capacity to do amazingly beautiful things too. That gives me the hope to feel like we will, when necessary, do what we need to do. But one of the important things is identifying what the issues are. And I don't think that hiding from that and pretending like everything is possible, everything is good, but to be rigorous and to be clear-eyed. This is fucked up. And what can we be doing? It's not the individuals. I would be very depressed if it was only up to me to solve every problem in the world, but it's not. I look at the evidence, I see the fucked upness of it, and I always stick to the possibilities that exist still for us to have more freedom, to get toward that thing, the horizon that we're all trying to work for.